it's Ruby. I am back again for the 10th podcast in a row. 10 weeks, can you believe it? I can. I love this. I'm having so much fun. And I hope that you're having fun listening to me having fun, because that's a total win-win. It's awesome. Okay, first off, I want to talk about toxic toys. I have been seeing so many discussions lately about buying equipment for pegging, and even just sharing experiences of buying different sex toys. And there are way too many of them out there that talk about really cheap toys, because many times in these discussions on the internet, they leave a link which connects you up to exactly the toy that they bought. And so often, it's a horrendous jelly toy with phthalates and all kinds of stuff. So I'm just going to give a little monologue here about toxic toys. Just a little story and spit it out there, because I think the more we talk about this, the more we share information. I mean, whoever you talk to about sex toys, whether it's your partner or your friends, maybe you have some friends you talk to about sex toys. That's totally awesome. Share the information. Or even if you're just on the internet and you prefer anonymity, you don't talk to anybody in your life besides your partner about sex toys, get the information out there, because this is really important. Okay, this is how it works with sex toys. There's a number of companies out there that are really lack integrity, and they make all kinds of cheap toys with probably slave labor in China. Of course, I have no proof of that. But they are made in China, and they are toxic, and they have what's called phthalates in them. And let's just forget the spelling on all that. It's just a toxic chemical, and it's nasty. There are other toys with other toxicities as well, but this is the most important one. But getting back to these companies, these are like the big boys, the companies that have been there for a long time and have been selling these really awful cheap toys. Here's why. Because they can get away with it, first of all, and because they don't care. So here's how it works. Those toys are sold under the classification of a novelty. This means they were never intended to be used inside your body. Now, everybody knows that when you buy sex toys, of course you're going to use them in your body. That's what they're for. But the point is that sex toys are not regulated. Now, we don't want them regulated. We don't want the government sticking their nose or anything else into our sex toy businesses, right? So it's up to us consumers to educate ourselves and each other about what toys are good for us and what toys are bad for us. Because when we stop buying those cheap toys and increase the demand for them, decrease the demand for them and increase the demand for safe, healthy sex toys, that's when they'll stop making them. Meanwhile, since they're not regulated, there are no regulations in terms of how they label them. So literally, they could even lie on the labeling. They know that people are concerned about phthalates, and this is something that's talked about a lot in the community. So they have no compunction about putting phthalate-free on their toy, even if it's not, and there is no repercussions for them. So please be aware that when you're buying your toys, if you really want non-toxic sex toys, the best way to do it is to buy from a company that has a reputation for paying attention to that, who all over their website, if you buy online, talk about which toys are safe, which toys aren't, or perhaps they've made a promise to only sell the non-toxic ones. And this is also important because you put those things in your body, and basically you're putting something inside your body where there's like mucous membranes and stuff, and you have something in there that's got chemicals which they actually have passed laws limiting the amounts of phthalates in like food grade plastics and baby toys. I mean, this is nasty stuff. You do not want to be putting this in your body. You don't want to just toss it off and say, oh yeah, it's not that big of a deal. It never really bothered me. Well, yeah, it's hard to tell what the damage is if someday you end up with cancer. Who knows? These things, certainly nobody's out there doing a study of if people get sick from phthalate-filled sex toys. I can tell you that. But if they've already passed laws that prohibit past a certain amount of them in food-grade plastic, so that means like Tupperware, things to hold your food in, leftovers and things, and they've actually banned them in babies' chew toys and things, then you know that there's something going on there. You know you don't want to put those suckers in your body. So please pay attention to this and share the information. It's really tempting to buy those stupid, awful, toxic toys from China because they are cheap. Okay? They are very cheap. And I've said many times, say it again, if you're going to buy those, and I understand if that's your budget, cover them with a condom, don't use them for very long, and throw them away after a number of uses, because that's pretty much all they're good for. Protect yourself with a condom. That should be safe enough, because condoms are certainly not porous, and you shouldn't get much of that chemical on you, except for perhaps the very base of it. But it's really important to take care of your bodies, people, and because this industry is unregulated, don't depend on labeling, don't depend on the manufacturers to do you any favors here, because they won't. They're in it for the money. One of the things that I posted on my blog some time back, it was on Earth Day as a matter of fact, was a short interview with Jennifer Pritchett, who was one of the founders of Smitten Kitten. And this is a sex toy store in Minneapolis. I'm not sure if they have any other stores, but the one in Minneapolis has been there for a long time. She was one of the people who started right off the bat fighting against toxic sex toys and found out really quickly that she and her partners actually got threatened from the big boys and said, just shut your mouths, don't be talking about this. And sort of implied, you know, violence, threatened violence. I mean, probably not blatantly, or they could have been taken to court, or who knows how all that went down. But she talks about this in this short interview. So, the burden lies upon the consumer. Please pass the word. Let us all work together so that the demand for these toxic sex toys goes down. You know how it works. As soon as the demand goes down, then they will stop making them. There are some companies who were not real reputable, and they've actually started making silicone toys. Why? Because we're asking for them. And then what happens is, the more companies that are making them, the price goes down a little bit. And it's not a matter of, you know, those expensive silicone toys. I don't know if they'll ever get as cheap as the jelly ones, but believe me, it's not worth it for the jelly ones, unless you kind of have a running line of them, and you put the condoms on, and then after a while, you throw them away. Especially if you're using these things in your ass. They're porous. They hold bacteria. They can't be sterilized. Ugh. Okay. I am done talking about toxic toys. I just had to say all that because I'm running into so many threads of people talking about buying toys, and I'm appalled at how few people know this. So please, spread the word. Whether it's on your anonymous Facebook profile or wherever you hang on the internet, or if you hang with a bunch of kinky friends. You know, sitting there having a cup of coffee at Starbucks, lean into the crowd and say, so you all know about toxic sex toys, right? That ought to get some attention. Okay, here's a letter. Before I say anything else, I would like to thank you for providing a valuable resource full of helpful info that is very much appreciated by people such as myself. I actually have quite a bit of experience with this subject, going back to a long-term relationship that predates my marriage. I was convinced, in all honesty, not much convincing was required, to try it once by a former girlfriend after a few drinks and a 2 a.m. drive to Manhattan to procure the required equipment. For my ex-girlfriend, pegging was completely natural and effortless. No external motivation was needed, and she could climax without additional stimulation every single time. Things are a bit more complicated with my wife, although I am lucky enough to be with someone who is open-minded enough to go quite a ways in the kink department. There are a number of issues that I was hoping to get some guidance with. Our biggest obstacle to pegging right now is the issue of prep. The time delay needed to put on a harness and setup seemed to be enough to kill the mood, at which point everything becomes rather mechanical and one-sided. Although I enjoy the pegging tremendously, I feel a great deal of guilt over the one-sided nature of the experience and would like to find a way for my wife to enjoy it to at least some degree, if not to actually be able to climax as my ex-girlfriend did. We have tried various different harnesses and single/double-sided dildos with little success. I'm afraid I am at a bit of a loss as to how we could address this. Okay, let me first start off to say you are lucky, sir. You are lucky indeed to have not only an ex-girlfriend who was into it, but now a wife who are totally down with pegging. That's awesome. There are a lot of men out there who would love to be you. Okay, prep time. This is sort of interesting. You don't really give me any information about what kind of harness you have, even though you say you sort of have an assortment. I'm going to go with, like, the most common, which is the two-strap leather or something along those lines. That can be set up so that it's all sized for her perfectly, and then all you do is undo one of the buckles on the waist on one side, and that's it, and step out of it. So it's all ready to just step in, buckle the buckle, and you are good to go. And that takes about 30 seconds. So, you know, that's not a lot of time. You know, when you talk about it kills the mood, I picture you the way some people do with a brand new harness, that none of the buckles are attached or anything, and they're putting it on for the very first time, and they're like, how the frick does this thing work, right? I hope you're not doing that, because that is totally unnecessary. Like I mentioned, if you have the two-strap vinyl or leather, then all you have to do is undo that one buckle at the waist. Now, if you have a spare parts harness, that can also be set up so that all you're playing with is the waist and the fine tunings. You know, that one is also sort of a 30-second deal. So if 30 seconds is too much for you guys, then one of the things that I would suggest, the thing I would suggest, is that you actually put the harness on before you start. That'd be my suggestion. You know you're going to have sex. You kind of put it on together as the very, very beginning of the foreplay, and then maybe you get into kissing, and then maybe you get into other stuff. I mean, I can picture a situation where you are laying there kissing, and you are grabbing that, like a flare-based dildo, and snugging it up against her clit and just sort of pressing it really lightly and rhythmically, slowly, while you kiss her. I mean, that would be totally hot. And I don't know if she likes anything like that. I'm not really sure what your wife likes and what she doesn't. So, of course, it's all very individual. But the point is it can already be on her when you do a lot of your foreplay. You don't need to wait to put it on. So that is one option. There is something that you didn't mention that I would suggest you might try. It's on my to-buy list. It's the next thing I'm going to get. It's a WeVibe 3. Now, the WeVibe is a U-shaped item that goes inside the woman, and it buzzes on the clit and then also in the G-spot inside. It is 40% stronger than its previous model. And it's got a remote. Now, the reason I hear that the remote is really cool is because if you're buzzing away and all of a sudden you really would like to change the speed, since it's got, I think there's 8 different speeds or 6, I forget. You don't want to reach down there and click on that baby. It's kind of hard to do sometimes in the middle of pushing your bodies against each other and harnesses and things like that. The remote takes all of that awkwardness away. If any of you have put a flared-based dildo with a vibrating bullet inside the base of that dildo and put it in a harness and started fucking a guy, and then all of a sudden it's like you really would like to turn it off or change the speed, it's a pain in the ass to reach under the harness, push the bottom of the button and the bullet and actually get it. Talk about killing a mood, you know, not a fun thing. I am all totally for remotes, man. Give me the remote, baby. So I would very much suggest this. This comes from a couple who have a double-ended dildo, and they use that in conjunction with the WeVibe 3, and they love it. They totally love it. The last thing I want to say to you, reader, is have you talked with her? Does she really feel that it's one-sided? Because it could be that your guilt is for nothing. So many guys would like to have their women have mutual pleasure, and of course we all would. But even if she's not orgasming, she's likely still having a great time. You know, kind of like when you have your face stuck in her pussy. You're not having an orgasm either, but you're having a wonderful time. So I'm not clear whether you have checked with her on this, and if she said, yeah, kills the mood and I'm really not into it after that, or if it's just you and you're kind of worrying. So it's possible that you're just worrying and that you just need to let go of the guilt and don't focus on her orgasm so much. I assume she can orgasm some other way, so not to worry. You know, the ability to orgasm during pegging is in the, you know, women who can do that are in the minority, from my experience. There are no studies on this. There's all this stuff that we talk about. It's so funny. It's like there's nobody out there doing studies. But in my experience talking with people, there are more women trying to have an orgasm when they're pegging their guy than ones who actually can. So it's okay. It's all normal. It's fine. If she can orgasm other ways, just take the focus off that. And try a few other things like the Wee Vibe, maybe, and maybe she'll get there and maybe she won't. But I'll bet she's having a really fun time. I mean, I am very much like this. I am still waiting to get to my orgasm while I peg a guy. And that's why the Wee Vibe is on my list. So it's, you know, it's all okay, guys. It doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be simultaneous mutual pleasure. It's lovely if it is, but if it's not, see if you can just take a deep breath and relax into receiving this wonderful pegging and focus on your own pleasure, because it's really okay if you do. I think you guys are really centered on giving pleasure. This is your natural role when you're fucking us. And so let it go. It's okay. You know, it's okay to be focused on your own pleasure and receiving. That would be my advice to you. Let's see. I'd like to read another letter, and this is from a woman who was talking about how she and her boyfriend came to pegging. Okay. For my boyfriend and me, it's all about communication. I can't express how important this was for me to be open to pegging him. One of the best ways we have found to talk about things that might be uncomfortable is through texting. I know, that sounds stupid. But it gives you a chance to collect your thoughts on a subject, form a coherent response, and it removes the awkwardness of having to say out loud what your fantasies are until you feel comfortable actually talking about it. What works for us is that we often talk about our fantasies with each other, and he brought up this new desire after lots of embarrassment and promise you won't think I'm weird back and forth conversation. I've always been very sexual and open, and I try not to let mainstream ideas about sex and relationships affect my opinion on things. But my initial reaction to his mention of wanting me to play with him was that of fear that he had no longer found me attractive. I know I can't be the only girl who worries that their partner will no longer be attracted to them, so when he originally said he wanted that, I resisted and claimed the above, and just sort of hoped the whole thing would go away, because ignoring those desires makes them go away, right? Ha ha. Parentheses, sarcasm. After my initial reaction to it, he let the idea go for a little while, but continued to reassure me that I was what he wanted, which was important, because my fear was that he didn't find me desirable anymore, or wouldn't after the fact. In our next round of fantasy talk, he brought it up again, and this time, because I had been able to mull it over for a bit, I realized that his desire had always been there for him, and that his telling me about it changed nothing in him, whereas, because I knew this new piece of information, I saw him differently, and somehow in my mind, that made me feel like this new sudden change had occurred in him as well, but for him it had always been there, and he felt that way all while still caring for and wanting to be with me. If you're wanting to get your girl to do this with you, I think all the suggestions mentioned are great ideas, but I think it's especially important for her to realize that it has nothing to do with a deficiency in her that makes you want to be pegged. And I think a great way to talk about your desire for it is through a text medium, letters, emails, text, whatever, so that you both don't feel embarrassed by the situation, especially if she is vanilla and isn't willing to try new things because it's bad, quote unquote. My boyfriend and I progressed from the fantasy to one day me feeling brave with some liquid courage and deciding I was going to touch his ass, and his response was immediate, and I could tell right away how much he enjoyed it. That response alone was more than I could hope for, because knowing that I was causing that much pleasure for him was such a huge turn-on. I feel like no matter what your partner's preference, if she cares about you, she's going to respond to your reaction to it. What worked for us was communicating our fantasies. For us, it's through text messaging, so we can be as candid and open with each other as possible without feeling embarrassed by actually saying it out loud until we got used to the idea. And then receiving feedback and reassurance from him that it was because I was doing the play that he was turned on by it. After a few months of anal play, I found a strap-on he had bought under the bed, but had been too scared to show me, so I decided to surprise him in the shower with it, and the rest is history. Oh, goodness. Yeah, texting is awesome if it works for you, so that you have that little degree of separation so as not to feel embarrassed. Whatever is most comfortable method of communication for you and yours is great. Go for it. And sometimes that little degree of distance does make things a little bit easier to put down and get out and express. I mean, you know, email, you go over and over and over it and you write that email and then you press the send button and you just pray and then you kind of want to claw it back out of the machine when you're in your beginning stages of expressing your desires. Yeah, but then it all turns out okay most of the time. I mean, yes, that little separation sometimes makes a big difference. So whatever communication method works, awesome. Again, this reader's sharing talked about patience and gentle persistence, and also, most important, reassurance. I love that he waited until she made the first move with her finger. And for her to find that strap-on under the bed must have really been a thrilling moment. So, can you see how they worked up to it? It was a real back-and-forth exchange with likely days and days in between the different events, but they got there. So, have patience, everybody. This is not something you walk in one day and say, hey, I'd really like to do this, let's do it now, okay? Of course, you know, going back to the previous reader, I forgot to mention how hot I thought that taking, you know, convincing your partner and then taking a drive to Manhattan at 2 a.m. and getting the equipment. Oh my God, I think that needs to be in a story. That really does. That's an awesome little piece of inspiration there. I love it. Okay, here's another sharing from a woman talking about what she likes about strap-ons. For me, the use of a strap-on is a powerful feeling, but it is neither the equipment nor the putting it on that gives me that feeling. It is all the build-up to it. It is the intimacy of all the sensual, sexual, and yes, often impact play leading up to it that gets me feeling that way. It's the look in someone's eyes that says, please fuck me, that makes me want to make them feel it. That's the power of it, the power to be able to provide them with what they want. It has never been a just-do-it thing for me, but I'm not a dominant. I like all the build-up, the stroking and rimming, the nibbling thighs and ass cheeks, the teasing. And while I myself prefer doggy style when receiving from a strictly sensation standpoint, I enjoy pegging, at least some of the time, with him on his back, legs up and me standing, so I can have better control and so I can see his eyes and face. Those are some lovely moments that are a shame to miss. I don't have a lot to say about that one. I just thought that you would all really enjoy hearing that. That's a wonderful little piece of sharing there. Okay, this one is a response to a reader wrote me and responded to my convincing her to try it. No, wait. It was not that one. It was what I love about pegging. Confessions of a Pegger, that was it. So this is her response to that. I think age is one of the keys. I was 44 when I did it for the first time, and I couldn't have imagined doing it any time before that. I wasn't open-minded enough. I had to learn to accept things that go beyond normal. Without ever having got involved in BDSM, I never ever could have fathomed putting a strap-on on. No way. I have two traits that maybe you and I share. I am also a rebel, a rule-breaker at heart. And I am intensely curious about new sexual experiences. I'm currently planning a male-male-female with two bisexual men. I had to learn to not be afraid of my desires and not worry about judgment or being thought of as a slut. Frankly, a lot of women never ever seem to get over that, which holds so many of them back from enjoying the wonderful sex life they could have. But maybe the most important factor was I met a wonderful guy who opened up to me about his desires, and after some initial hesitation, I wanted to do it to him. The rest is history. How to actually get women to do it? They have to start believing that guys find a woman with a strap-on hot. I know my worst fear was that I thought I would look stupid. Yes, I know, what was I thinking? But I believe this is how most women feel about it. They don't think it looks sexy, but rather ridiculous. Then they have to understand how much it does for the guy and how much it can do for the woman. Really, sometimes I think men need to be a bit more aggressive about their not-so-mainstream desires. A woman can be whatever the hell she wants, bi, submissive, or into anal sex, or a sadist, just to name a few examples. But a man, he has one role he is supposed to fill. Guys have a prostate, women don't, so why is receiving anal sex acceptable for women but gay for men? And also, bi women are hot, bi men are ooh. Women who use toys are sexy, men who use toys are pathetic. There is a clear double standard against guys at work here, and I think they need to fight it just as aggressively as women keep fighting double standards that work against us. Wow, there's a lot of stuff in that one. I think we all need to fight against that double standard so that men don't feel the constriction of their expected social sexual role. I did my part lately. I sent a good friend a birthday present. I sent him a Tanga massage sleeve. He's been kind of lonely without a partner, and I am waiting to hear how it is. And, you know, I talked to him on the phone and asked him about it, and he's like, I don't know. And I could just hear his reluctance more, you know, when we got to talking about it. It's more because he thought, you know, all guys' sex toys were cheesy. I have to admit, the Fleshlight, you know, if it might work for some of you guys, but good God, that thing's cheesy. It's way cheesy. Finally, there are some sex toys being made out there that have style and elegance and substance, and they're made nicely, and they still do wonderful things for us. And I believe that the Tanga sleeves are one of those. That's what the guys say anyway. So, okay, I did my part and I sent my friend a Tanga sleeve. The learning how not to be afraid of our desires, indeed, all of us need to do that, because you know the moment when you finally share, not confess your desires, because that implies wrongdoing. The moment that you finally share your desires to whatever partner you're with, whether you've been married for 10 years or 30 years, or you've been dating for 6 months, or you've got a year of loose friends with benefits relationship, and you finally open up your mouth and share what your desires are, and then they say awesome, or they accept it in some manner, goodness, you are going to regret that it took you so long to open your mouth and ask for what you want. Is it scary to open up your mouth and ask for what you want and express yourself and express your desires? Hell yes, it is. Because when you first spit those words out, you want to like sink into a hole in the ground because you're so afraid of their reaction, right? I've been there, man, done that. But think of it this way. If your partner freaks out and leaves you, did you really want to live the rest of your life never knowing how fulfilling that desire would feel? Isn't that good information that your partner wasn't ready for an exploratory sexual relationship of the caliber you need? And that they're definitely not GGG. Now, okay, now don't everybody in like long-term relationships go out there and freak out their partner when they leave, they call up and give me a hard time. Obviously, if you've been married for 30 years and you have kids and they've got all kinds of other things going, that needs to be taken into consideration. I guess I just want to really encourage people to take a deep breath and start to walk in that direction. Start to lean in that direction of opening up to your partner. You know, I think last week's podcast was from a man who finally, after 30 years, actually, or maybe it was 20, doesn't matter, finally talked to his wife and told her what he wanted. She was more thrilled at the fact he was opening up to her than the actual act which he wanted. She certainly warmed up to the act later, but wow, you know, it can be really good stuff. If you're in a relationship where you have trust, which you really should be if you're fucking each other, Your partner should be open to hearing your desires and should seriously consider them. So keep that in mind, everybody. You know, if your partner comes to you and asks for something and it kind of freaks you out at first, just take a deep breath and ask him if you can just sit with that for a little while and get back to him. Because chances are when you sit with it for a while, unless it's something that really crosses your lines, and they get so much pleasure out of it, you know, it would be an awesome thing. Even if you're not into having him suck your toes, if he does it and totally gets off, you know, by doing that, awesome. I'm not into toe sucking, but if a guy got off on it that much, I'd probably let him do it. I think it'd be fun to see him that turned on. See, that's my deal. And in the previous sharing, you know, this may take a while. As opposed to just opening up your mouth and spitting it out, you know, consider gradually approaching it, because instant gratification is a little tough in this situation. Guys, you might want to, as much as you want something and have been fantasized about something for years and years, you might want to talk to your ass and your cock and tell them to chill for a while. Maybe go get a double-ended dildo or a suction cup dildo for the shower and fuck yourself silly if you want to. And women, if you've been fantasizing about the whole pegging thing for the longest time, and maybe you've even got the equipment, maybe put it on when he's not home and practice fucking a pillow or something. But I guess my point is, don't rush your partner. Do not rush your partner. Not a good idea. It all needs to be kind of gradual in this whole scenario with pegging, because there are so many factors that can complicate things. There are so many, truly. It's not just what you're doing. It's the connotations connected to it. It's the stereotypes and the misconceptions. And then it's the whole psychological stuff about what the individual people there have brought on their plate to the situation. And that can be very complicated as well. So, yeah. Patience, everybody. Don't rush into things. Okay, I want to talk about pygophilia again. Pygophilia is, I mentioned this in podcast 3, and I want to go back to it because there's different forms of this word. And, you know, I'm fascinated with butts, so I'm fascinated with this word because that's what it means. Sexual arousal from seeing or touching the buttocks of another person. The term is not gender-specific. A person who is thus aroused is a pygophilist, or a pygophile. Pygophiliac may be used if the arousal could be considered abnormal, pathological, or extreme. Well, maybe I'm borderline on that. I don't think I'm there. Pygophilist can be used to infer a person whose predilection includes actively touching buttocks, as the suffix "-ist," connotates one who does, whereas pygophile, one who likes, could include those who are content merely to look. Okay, so the content merely to look, the pygophile, yeah, I'm out of that one. Not happening. I think I'm a pygophilist. P-Y-G-O-P-H-I-L-I-S-T. And sadly, so sadly, I only found this in the Urban Dictionary. Not in any dictionaries yet. Pygophilia is, as it's in the diagnosis of someone who gets aroused from looking at buttocks. Because I am not content to merely look, as we all know. Well, you know, perhaps I'm content to just look at women's asses, because I do check out the women too. But I'm quite content just to look at them and not do anything to them or touch them. But actually, the thought of their guy fucking them in the ass, the women, turns me on too, but okay, I digress. I just wanted to revisit that word because I'm so thrilled that there's a word out there. I mean, I was thinking of getting a t-shirt with the word pygophilist. And when someone says, okay, what does that mean? Say, yeah, go home and look it up on Google. Google it. And of course, if you're standing in line in the market and someone's got their iPhone and they pop it up, yeah, they're going to know, dude. They are so going to know. But actually, that could be cool. Maybe that's how you would meet someone who was into it. That would be awesome. Okay. Here I am, and you can follow me a bunch of different ways. You can follow me on Twitter, Ruby_Ryder. You can follow me on Facebook. You can subscribe to my blog if you like. Those are all options on my blog, on my website. Again, I'd like to mention that I am having a subscription sale this August for the entire month, and we are winding down. We are on the downside of the month. We are on our way out. It's the 20th today. And my subscription sale only goes on for 10 more days. On September 1st, it'll stop. Here's what you get. The very top-of-the-line membership, which usually costs $50 a year, I am going to give to you for $30 for the first year. And after that, it's a recurring payment, and it goes up to $50. You can cancel it any time you like, unless you are amazingly satisfied with my stories, in which case, of course, you will still want them. You're going to get, for that membership, a year's worth of monthly erotic stories, plus all of the archived stories, which number 26 right now. So do the math, and it's a total deal. It's a deal, I feel, a substantial erotic meal. So keep it real and click the button and go for it, because you only got 10 more days. Hey, send me your questions and your stories, too, because I would love to have more questions. I'm pulling all kinds of stuff out of things I have packed away for blog ideas and story ideas and things like that. And I'm finding some awesome things from writings that I have found before or comments that I've received in the past. But I would love to answer any questions you have about pegging, about sexuality, about whatever you want. You know, throw anything up there. Hey, I might answer some really unusual questions. You never know until you ask. So this is Ruby Ryder at Pegging Paradise. Thanks for tuning in, and I will see you next week.